As you know, earlier when I was out here, our initial reports was that the president was not hit. That's what we run into when we try to give information when we aren't 100% sure or we don't have from the source. We do have somebody there with the president. I will be here, and I just want to let you know, I'll come down every 15 or 20 or 30 minutes just to let you know exactly what we know, and we'll also let you know when we don't have any further information.
Is that what you know? What you just said now, is that the extent of what you know?
That's the extent of what I can say at this time.
Have the surgery and come back?
A phone call or something?
I will. Sure. No.
Do you have any idea that there are reports that it functions to its lungs?
We can't confirm that yet. We've talked to the doctors, but, we cannot confirm that yet.
Larry, can you confirm reports that Jim is in surgery now?
Yes.
What process does the United States government go through with foreign governments when something like this occurs?
Jerry, there is a notification process, and I think the State Department has moved on that.
Has the U.S. military been placed on any higher readiness?
Not that I'm aware of. There were some questions about the vice president. I understand he was in Texas today. He is returning. He is expected to arrive at Andrews around 8 o'clock this evening, according to the information I have now. He has been informed. He is in communication.
Is there any division of labor of any kind?
Not that I'm aware of. We just haven't crossed those bridges yet.
What's the nature of the notification that the State Department is making to foreign governments?
I'm sure it's a notification to indicate that the president is in stable condition.
Larry, who's running the government right now?
If the president goes into surgery and goes under anesthesia, the vice president would become the acting president at that moment, or under what circumstances does he?
I cannot answer that question, which is technical and legal.
What is the consideration in not keeping us more up to date on the president's condition? We know he's in surgery, and no one seems to be able to come out and confirm it. Why the time lag?
Leslie, I would assure you there's no reason except we want to be completely sure of our facts. I'm sorry, I cannot do it from here at this time.
What can you tell us about the gentleman who's in custody?
Absolutely nothing. That would have to come in Secret Service or the police.
Larry, who will be determining the status of the president and whether the vice president should, in fact, be the acting president?
Pardon?
Who will be determining the status of the president?
I don't know the details on that. I'll let you know shortly.
That was the Deputy White House Press Secretary, Larry Speaks, and this is Neil Strauser at the White House. Speaks has been at George Washington University Hospital, has been covering the events from there, came back here. There was obviously something of a time gap in his trip back here. He was unable to confirm those reports. He came by way of President's brother, Neil Reagan. Mr. Reagan is in surgery. Speaks did tell us that the Press Secretary, James Brady,
ladies and gentlemen, I just want to touch upon a few matters
Alexander Hayes
associated with today's tragedy. First, as you know, we're in close touch with the vice president, who is returning to Washington. We have in the Situation Room all of the officials of the cabinet who should be here and ready at this time. We have informed our friends abroad of the situation, the president's condition as we know it, stable, now undergoing surgery, and there are absolutely no alert measures that are necessary at this time or contemplate. Now, if you have some questions, I'd be happy to take them.
Crisis management, is that what it put into effect when it arrived?
Crisis management is in effect.
Who is making the decisions for the government right now? Who's making the decisions?
Constitutionally, gentlemen, you have the president, the vice president, and the secretary of state in that order. And should the president decide he wants to transfer the helm to the vice president, he will do so. As of now, I am in control here in the White House, pending return of the vice president, and in close touch with him. If something came up, I would check with him, of course.
What are the extent of the president's injuries?
Well, Well, as best we know, he's had one round into his body, in the left side, into the left lung, and there is a surgery underway to remove the round now. When the president entered surgery, he was conscious. All his signs were stable, and the situation is very clear.
What did you do first surgery?
By phone? Before surgery?
No, I did not. Nor was it necessary. I was in close touch with both Mr. Meese and Mr. Baker throughout, and have been from the early moments.
Approximately when did you arrive at the White House?
Very few moments after the incident.
And do you know what is the condition, Mr. Brady?
We understand that I just saw on television what you saw, and it sounds serious.
What's the reaction of the soldiers to this?
I don't anticipate any reaction. I think you've gotten all that you need for the moment, and thank you.
Will you remain in charge here until the Vice President...
We'll stay right where we are until the situation clarifies.
When is the Vice President expected here? When is the Vice President expected here?
Later this afternoon. He'll be here shortly.
When the operation began, sir, on the President, about what time?
Was I here? Yes, I was here.
What time?
What time? The operation began? What time was the operation?
I don't know. Just it was shortly after that announcement that you heard on the radio.
Vice President be back, sir?
Early evening. Well, I'm not going to make it a habit of saying where he'll be back.
Will you come back and talk to us, sir?
Thank you. If it's necessary, of course.
Any additional measures being taken? Was there a conspiracy or was this a lot?
There are no indications of anything like that now, and we are not going to say a word on that subject until the situation clarifies, of course.
From what you know, this president's condition, that the vice president will have to, for a period of time, take the role of acting president.
That's a fundamentally premature question, and I couldn't answer it. Thank you very much.
That was the Secretary of State, Alexander Haig, who appeared very suddenly in the briefing room here at the White House, along with a man who did not speak, the National Security Advisor, Richard Allen, now standing by his side. As Allen spoke in a voice that was obviously very shaken. Allen telling us, speaking of the tragedy of today, telling us, confirming that the president is in surgery, that the bullet wound that he suffered involved a left lung. We heard earlier that the bullet was still inside. The surgery is obviously to remove the bullet and repair it, whatever damage there may have been. So we hear from from the Secretary of State that the president is in surgery. The Secretary of State, in effect, is the man in charge right now. Constitutionally, as he told us, it runs from the president to the vice president to the Secretary of State, that line of succession. The president is in the hospital, presumably under anesthesia right now. The vice president is flying back from Texas. He's making a speech there today, and so the Secretary of State is at the White House and is in charge and has just appeared, in effect, to tell us that, to say that he sees no indication at this point of a conspiracy, sees no need either of any kind of alert measures, but to tell us that the government is still in good hands, so to speak, while the president is undergoing the surgery. Mr. Haig, unable to tell us either precisely what the president's condition is, but telling us that the bullet wound was more than a graze, as some had first thought after it was learned that he was hit by the bullet at all, that he did receive a bullet in the left lung, is now undergoing surgery. And Mr. Haig also telling us that the condition of James Brady appears serious. Brady, we understand, also undergoing surgery at this point. Brady, the White House News Secretary. Reed, that's as much as we know right now. It's obvious we're going to be kept much better informed from now on, now that things have gotten organized a bit, and we'll be here.
All right. Thank you, Neil Strausser at the White House. We should say that the Vice President, George Bush, was in Fort Worth, Texas, where he was en route to Austin to make a speech. He was informed by the Secret Service of the events in Washington. He now is on his way back to Washington, having made a brief stop in Austin, Texas. And we have a report from Frankie Rodriguez of station KLBJ in Austin.
Vice President Bush arrived here in Austin, according to airport tower people, about 2:18 Central Time. According to the people at the airport, he stayed in the plane while it was refueling. He had already received message that he would be routed to Washington from Austin. He was scheduled to make a press conference appearance at 3 o'clock Central Time and then speak to the joint session of the Texas Legislature. However, upon his arrival, they simply pulled up to the terminal, refueled, and Vice President Bush and Air Force Two left about 3:08 Central Time, headed back to Washington. During that time, he met with Governor Bill Clements of Texas, who was accompanied by his wife. They met aboard Air Force Two.
That's the situation with respect to the Vice President's travel plans. He's expected in Washington, D.C. at Andrews Air Force Base early this evening. And he will, of course, receive in-air briefings as to the situation and as it pertains to the presidency. It is a constitutional and legal question as to whether or when or if Mr. Bush takes the reins of the presidency. That will depend, of course, on the condition of Mr. Reagan, who, as we have learned from Secretary of State Haig and from others, has or is undergoing surgery at George Washington University Hospital for the removal of a .38 caliber bullet which lodged somewhere in his left thorax, in his chest, grazed a lung. He's had a transfusion. We have been informed by reliable sources. His condition was stable when he entered the hospital. It is said that he, not having known immediately he was wounded, walked into the hospital, and there he underwent brief examinations, and he was taken to surgery. The damage to the track of the bullet and the removal of the excision of the bullet itself, of course, may take an undetermined amount of time. Mr. Reagan, 70 years of age, but as we have said before and has been said and commented upon previously, he keeps himself in good condition, takes good care of himself, and is an athletic and active president at the age of 70. The scene itself was confused by the rain and by the fact that nobody knew what was going on at first. Several bullets were fired as Mr. Reagan left a hotel where he'd given a speech. It was known that three people immediately had been felled, one of whom was his press secretary, James Brady, who was wounded in the head, we believe, and his condition is thought to be very serious. Two others who were wounded were a Treasury Secret Service agent and a District of Columbia policeman whose condition is described as critical. It was thought that the president, in fact, it was said by the White House that the president had been missed and was not hit or hurt. And this was information that the news media went with for the better part of 1 hour, when suddenly it was discovered he was not at the White House, where it was thought his limousine had returned him, but in fact had been taken to the hospital too, wounded with a bullet lodged in the chest. Reaction has come, as we've noted, from London. We had a report from Anthony Brutton on the reaction and the statement by Margaret Thatcher, the British Prime Minister. Our correspondent Walter Cronkite happens to be in Moscow at the moment. And Walter, perhaps we can get to what Moscow thinks of the felling of its main Western adversary.
Well, Reed, it's midnight here just about now. In fact, it's 25 minutes after midnight. When the news came first rattling over the teleprinters of the American News Service wires here at the CBS Bureau.
That is all we're going to hear from Walter Cronkite in Moscow for the moment. As you could probably hear, the connection has been lost. We don't know how or where. But if we can get to Mr. Cronkite back, we'll do so. Summing up, a man has been arrested. He's identified as a 22-year-old from Evergreen, Colorado, whose name is listed as John W. Hinckley. He's a sandy-haired, blonde young man, 22 years of age, who the Secret Service alleges was wielding a .38 caliber pistol from which he fired from 4 to 6 shots. 4 of them took effect. 3 of them knocked down James Brady, the presidential press secretary, a District of Columbia policeman, and a Secret Service agent who lay on the sidewalk. The 4th bullet, unknown, perhaps even to the president himself, had lodged in Ronald Reagan's left chest. He was rushed on into his limousine, into the protection of the device, which was just there at the curb, from which he was taken immediately to a hospital, which is several blocks from the scene of the hotel where he had given a speech this afternoon. He has undergone surgery for removal of the bullet and repair of the track damage that it made. We are informed reliably that, as is probably customary in the case, he was given a transfusion. He was described as conscious when he entered the hospital. He was described also as having walked in ambulatory under his own power. And now, of course, is under anesthesia. And his wife, Nancy Reagan, has been in the hospital now the better part of a couple of hours. She having rushed over from the White House, she didn't go down to the hotel with him where he made the address. That is the situation as best we know it. Concern was voiced for the condition of James Brady from the outset. He's 40. He was felled, obviously, by a bullet in the head. And he was in a scanning device, a CAT scanner, one of those modern technological miracles that hospitals, well-equipped ones, have. He did not appear to be moving as people saw him wheeled into that scanning device to find out the exact condition of the head wound and where the bullet may lie. Mr. Reagan has been under surgery, we would gather now, for some time. That's an open-ended situation. Probably you don't know what you find until you get in. And the .38 caliber bullet is said to be somewhere in the thoracic area. It struck nothing critical, but it did apparently nick the left lung and may well have collapsed that, which is, again, not an unusual occurrence. George Bush, the vice president, was in Texas. He was making a series of speeches. He was informed. He is now en route aboard an Air Force plane to Andrews Air Force Base, where he'll take up station near or in the White House. The cabinet members and other people who make decisions as to how to, in the interregnum, carry on the business of government has gathered. Secretary of State Haig takes a more commanding position. In the absence of George Bush, next would fall to him, should the president be declared or declare himself to be incapacitated. Mr. Reagan, as we say, is in the hospital now, George Washington University Hospital, several blocks from the White House. His wife is with him. He has undergone surgery, or still perhaps maybe undergoing it. There's a recovery room process, of course, after this, which takes some considerable amount of time. We've received no late bulletins, no keeping up with it from the hospital itself. The White House staff has had a difficult time. It was the author of the first information, which was so heartening, that Mr. Reagan had been missed and wasn't hit or hurt. And they went with that for some time, until Lynn Nofsinger, another aide, an old-time press aide of the president's, came out of the hospital to inform everybody, yes, Mr. Reagan was hit. He had a bullet in his chest. He walked in. He's in stable condition, and we don't know what's going to happen next. What happened next was, as one might guess, was surgery to remove the bullet and repair the damage. The progress of that, the prognosis of this entire afternoon of surprise and horror, isn't known because perhaps no one yet knows it. At least nobody has said. Man's in custody. His background we don't know, except that he is from Colorado, the town of Evergreen, Colorado, and his name is said to be Hinckley. He's young, 22, sandy-haired man of nondescript or at least unknown background. He's in custody. There is no evidence that anybody else was involved in this. And a few moments ago, we heard an audibly shaken Secretary of State, Alexander Haig, I think, explaining the situation as best he understood it from the White House press room.
We have informed our friends abroad of the situation, the president's condition as we know it, stable, now undergoing surgery, and there are absolutely no alert measures that are necessary at this time or contemplate.
That was Alexander Haig, the Secretary of State, who came in to say what the own White House presidential deputies could not say. He, in fact, said just without any advertence that Mr. Reagan was undergoing surgery. He told people that, and this was really not quite confirmed by the White House, although the White House press corps already knew it. So you have the lag time, people trying to find out exactly what's going on from a hospital several blocks away, transmitting it on to the core of the White House staff and the press people who have gathered there. We have now been able to reestablish communication with correspondent Walter Cronkite in Moscow, and Walter was able to file for us this report on its reaction.
It's an eerie feeling, a little like being in another world, perhaps on another planet, sitting here this night looking out a window on the lights of Moscow as the news comes blaring out of the radio and rattling across the teleprinters. There's no way to know what the reaction or feelings of the Soviet leaders may be at this hour of the night. It was just a few hours ago, as a brilliant sunset lit the Kremlin walls, that I saw Soviet Premier Brezhnev's limousine come spurting out of the Spassky Gate, and with its trailing escort car, its blue lights flashing, go roaring toward the Brezhnev home. At that hour, his thoughts undoubtedly were occupied with the reports he must have just received from Warsaw on the government's compromise settlement offer to the labor movement. It was 3 hours later that presumably his phone rang with the report from Washington. That was 10:30 Moscow time. Was Brezhnev already abed? If so, was he awakened with the news? Those are really the trivia questions, I guess. The more serious questions must await further reports on Mr. Reagan's condition. But this correspondent can say that if there's anything more despairing than watching and listening to the horrible news on television and radio at home tonight, it's sitting in a foreign capital, and particularly one where the rivalry with everything American is particularly acute. And knowing that a few hours from now, on the morrow, one's going to have to face a lot of Russians who are going to ask with their eyes, if not their voices, what sort of society is it that our democracy has built in the West? As one whose preparatorial career has now included an unsuccessful attack on President Truman and the assassination of President Kennedy, it's a difficult question to answer. This is Walter Cronkite reporting for CBS Radio from Moscow.
And that was Walter's report as he issued it to us just a moment ago. I believe we've now established live contact. And Walter, as you mentioned a moment ago, you have you've seen it come, you've seen it go, you've seen it fail, and you saw in 1963 the horror of its success, this situation which will make it difficult on the streets of Moscow tomorrow to describe how America works. Has there been any late development there? Is there any indication that anybody really knows what's happened in America? I don't really believe that we have contact with Moscow. I believe that the line is not working as we were told it was. If we get Walter back, we'll attempt to do so. We do have, though, from Andrews Air Force Base, I believe, a situationer which will indicate a little bit more about the imminent arrival of George Bush. This day caught him in Texas. He's flying back. Let's go now to my colleague, John Perugia at Andrews.
Reed, the vice president left Austin, Texas Airport, the municipal airport in Austin, Texas, at approximately 4:11 this afternoon. He should be arriving at Andrews sometime around 7 o'clock tonight. It's approximately 2 hours and 50 minutes from there to here at Andrews. But, of course, they'll be pushing that aircraft probably a little faster than usual. The vice president spoke in Fort Worth earlier today. He was going down to Austin, Texas, to speak to the state legislature and to hold a news conference later this afternoon. He did neither. So, once again, he left the airport at 4:11. That's Eastern Standard Time. And he should be arriving here at Andrews Air Force Base at approximately 7 o'clock tonight, at which time we'll have a report for you. This is John Perugia reporting from Andrews Air Force Base.
Well, statements, of course, are being issued around the world. In case you're joining us, we should say that President Reagan was wounded in an assassination attempt this afternoon. He was not fatally wounded. He's undergoing surgery. His condition post-surgery is not yet known to us. He was, however, in stable condition when he went to the hospital. As we began, several statements have been issued. The West German Chancellor Schmidt has sent a cable to the president. In fact, those two men talked by telephone only early this morning, deciding what they would do in the event of some intervention internally or externally in Poland. And he said in part, "Dear President, with deepest disgust, I've just heard about your assassination attempt. I sincerely hope that the news is correct. You are not seriously injured. With my deepest, most sincere wishes for earliest recovery and your personal well-being, I combine my good wishes for your colleagues who also have been injured in this attack." And that is the cable that has been sent by the Chancellor of West Germany, Helmut Schmidt, who only hours before had a 15-minute telephone conversation with President Reagan, Schmidt in Bonn, the president in the White House, as they coordinated the Western reaction in the event of some untoward incident in Poland. Mr. Carter, the former president, has issued a statement saying he is anxiously awaiting further word of President Reagan's condition and that of the others wounded, and he and Mrs. Carter join the entire nation in prayers for the well-being of all those wounded and for their families. But what about the suspect? What about the man who is not hospitalized, but the man who is now incarcerated, or at least in custody? My colleague Ike Pappas has been trying to get some details out of the Washington District Police, and he is now at their headquarters. Ike?
Reid, the suspect has not been identified officially, at least, by the police department as yet. They have only moments ago identified, however, the police officer who was shot and is in serious condition at the Washington Hospital Center. His name is Thomas K. Delahanty of Washington's 3rd District. He is 45 years old. Delahanty is described as a canine officer, one of those police officers who works with dogs. You see them so frequently at public events, the dogs sniffing for bombs and for at airports for narcotics and so forth. However, today he was detailed on a special detail at presidential security duty outside of the Hilton Hotel, and was indeed there when the president was shot and the others. Anyway, he is now in serious condition, and the statement that is put out by the police department is that the exact extent of his injuries are not known. I suppose that's because he has not completed the physical examination, whatever, at Washington Hospital Center. He has been with the department, according to the police department, for 17 years. Now, the suspect is still on the third floor of the police headquarters here on off of 6th Street, in the district. It is just a few blocks from the nation's capital, from Capitol Hill. He is being questioned. We understand from police sources here that the questioning will go on for some hours, that he is being talked to by the Secret Service and also by detectives from the city police force. There is a possibility, according to these sources, that the suspect will be moved this evening from this location to the D.C. City Jail, some blocks away from here. However, that has not been confirmed. There is also the possibility that an arraignment will take place tomorrow morning. The normal hours for arraigning suspects in the city are from 9 a.m. until 12, and they felt that that might be the normal procedure, but they did not preclude the possibility that there would be a special arraignment of this suspect this evening. That is the situation at the moment from the D.C. Police headquarters, which, as you can imagine, is a very busy place at this moment. There are just literally dozens of reporters and cameras, police officials, etc., attempting to sort out the various details. And I must say that the details are slow in coming because they want to be absolutely sure of every fact. And also, there's a great concern here. You can feel it underneath the official poise that these police officers show. There is the concern that they don't want to have another situation such as we saw in Dallas with Ruby and Oswald, in which Jack Ruby shot Lee Harvey Oswald as he was leaving the police headquarters in Dallas. And we all know the consequences of that. So there is concern here, again, for the safety of the suspect. And whether we will know whether he has moved is still doubtful. That's the current situation, Reid,